It's Wednesday afternoon at 5 o'clock. You're listening to KDVS, and therefore this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. Every Wednesday afternoon on this station, for the last decade almost, I've come down here to 14 Lower Freeborn on the UC Davis campus to interview poets, pundits, prognosticators, people who care about code, about technology, about websites, about new gadgets, and especially about poetry, about the creative process, about the local poetry scene, and about performed poetry right here in the studio. This afternoon is no exception, for Zoe Keithley is here in the studio. She's the author of a brand new book called Crow Song. It's a collection of poetry that draws upon her life experiences. You might remember that I had Brad Buchanan on this radio show, I think as a phone-in, right when this book was published, just a few months ago. Brad Buchanan is the head of Roan Press, and Crow Song is one of the first books to be published by Roan Press. Zoe Keithley is here in the studio, and we're going to talk about her work as a poet and hear a few examples from this new book, Crow Song. And then, in the second half of the show, we'll be joined by two directors, theater directors. Candace Andrews is the director of a new show called Some Things Are Private. It opens a week from today, May 5th, and plays through Sunday, May 9th, at the Main Theater here at UC Davis. Candace Andrews will be joining us at about 5:30, and then at about 5:45, we will hear from Allison Stevenson. She is the director of the brand new production of Hair that I believe opens this evening over in the Arboretum. So, lots of theater, lots of poetry, and lots of thanks to you if you helped out last week during the KDVS fundraiser. We raised almost $48,000. If you want to help out, you're welcome to head over to fundraiser.kdvs.org. But now we're done with pitches, and we're on to poetry. Here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Welcome back to Jazz South, brought to you by the Southern Arts Federation and Coca-Cola. I'm Fred Story, and for the next 20 minutes, we'll spotlight a brand new recording from Astral Project. The New Orleans Quintet features saxophonist Tony DeGrotti, guitarist Steve Mazikowski, pianist Dave Torkanowski, bassist Jim Singleton, and drummer Johnny Vidakovich. Each musician is a heavyweight in his own right, with world-class credentials and talent to match. Together, they're perennial poll winners in New Orleans, and they've captured the attention of critics across the country. Downbeat magazine called the group one of the most distinctive and cohesive quintets in jazz of the 90s. Jazz Times wrote,
speaking of cohesive and impressive, Zoe Keithley is here in the studio. Zoe Keithley is a local author of many sorts of writing, with collections of poems, novels, short stories, and children's stories to her credit. As I mentioned earlier, her most recent collection of poetry is called Crow Song, and it draws upon her life experiences, dividing itself among the subjects of circling from the nest, scavenging, and the long, iridescent flight. Her stories have appeared in the North American Review, American Fiction, F3, Emergence, Pigeon, Dogwood, and many other journals. Her fiction is won a fellowship in prose from the Illinois Arts Council and finalist awards from Zoetrope, American Fiction, Dogwood, Emergence, and Hyphen. She lives in Sacramento, where she hosts workshops and public fiction readings. She teaches private writing students, and she's learning to play and compose music on the banjo. I'm very happy to have Zoe Keithley here in the studio. Zoe, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you so much. It's really fun to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And congratulations again on having your manuscript chosen to be published at Roan Press, one of the very few Sacramento-based presses. It must be nice to be singled out for that honor.
It certainly is. And I love the idea of being able to be part of a new high-quality press, which is what Brad Buchanan has, starting out in Sacramento. Sacramento can certainly use a really high-quality literary press, and he has a very good start on one.
Absolutely. And if you don't know, Google Roan Press, R-O-A-N. You'll find out more about the man who started it all. Once a Canadian, but decided after Barack Obama became president that he was going to join Americans in his work, in Brad's case, as a professor, as a poet, and as a publisher. Tell me a little bit about the process of how it was that Crow Song was selected. I forget, was that a contest? Did you submit a manuscript? Did you already know Brad? How did that work?
We had a workshop here a couple of summers ago that I was able to get together with Michael Curtis from the Atlantic Monthly. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that was fiction. And Brad attended that workshop, and at that workshop he told us that he and his wife were starting a press. And so I didn't think too much about it at the time, but a few months later, while I was vacuuming, something in my head said, well, you have a manuscript sitting in the closet. Why don't you take it over to him? So I just did that. I took it over and put it in his mailbox, broke his mailbox, and had to leave it on the porch, and he didn't hold that against me.
So a substantive manuscript then, if you're...
Yes, I had a manuscript that I had put together probably a year before for a contest, and I didn't win anything, but they sent it back in really excellent condition, which was lucky for me.
So ready to be used again.
And we combed through it. Brad went through it, and which is the editor's job, and had three categories of yes, no, and maybe. And then he got together with me, and we pretty much agreed. We didn't have too many disagreements on the choosing of the poetry. He had some editorial comments to make, and I found that he improved some of the poems for me. Sometimes you just can't get as much distance as you need, but an editor can get it.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful book. It's a 2009 publication, and I notice on the back that you have comments by a number of recognized authors to blurb the book, including Patricia D'Alessandro, who's been here in this studio and on this radio show. She says, there is so much to love in this first volume of poems by Zoe Keithley. Her lens is so focused so finely on the simple things of life that you travel with her through each poem. Each one conjures a delicate meditation. Each is as delicious as a sip of aged wine. So that's very nice, and a great number of other people say nice things about you on the back of your book. For folks who haven't picked up a copy yet, tell us a little bit about Crow Song in terms of the, for instance, the themes that you touch upon or the thematic elements.
Well, I over the course of the years, I found myself writing songs about crows because where I lived in Chicago, I'm a Chicagoan and have been out here about 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I kept crows seemed to follow me around for some reason, and I got to watching them, and poems developed out of that, and that became a kind of Brad said he wanted a theme for the book, and he wanted a structure in it. You know, in olden times, poetry collections were just poems in a bag. You know, you just threw them in a bag and
right.
and let the reader swim. And but nowadays they have poetry books have structure to them, which I think is a big help to the reader, and it's also a help to the writer too in thinking through what they're actually doing. So he sent me home to think through what I was doing, and I had the title came from the crow poems, and then the image of the crows gave me the categories.
That's wonderful. Have you read Ted Hughes's crow poems?
I have not.
They're very different from yours.
Are they? Okay.
Yes. some of them I would not have my 12-year-old daughter read.
Oh,
it's amazing
okay.
what you can do with a crow. But very powerful, full of myth, sometimes mythic violence, really important work. Probably good that you had come out with your Crow Song book before reading his book, Crow. But now that this book's been published, I encourage you to check it out because it's a wonderful
book.
Okay,
thank you.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, Zoe Keithley is my guest this afternoon. She's a local writer who's got a new book of poetry out called Crow Song, and we're talking about her work as a writer. What was it that brought you to Sacramento?
My son and his wife and a little red-haired boy named Ian.
Excellent. So
I have two other children here in Northern California. We're all within 200 miles of each other in the state.
That's wonderful. My my brother lives in Los Angeles, and I were trying to get my mom to move here from Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. And it's difficult because there are a lot of draws in a big city. And, of course, Chicago is famously a vibrant poetry city.
Yes, it is.
What sort of work did you do in Chicago, and what interactions did you have at all with that poetry scene?
Well, I had a lot of fun in Chicago. It's a very forgiving city for art, people who are starting their way in the arts, no matter what age they are. And, of course, the Green Mill and that whole type of poetry reading started at the Green Mill in Chicago. And on the other hand, I had started writing poems, and I had another friend who had started writing poems too. And we went to a music event and looked around the space, and I said to her, "This would be a great place for a poetry reading." And she said, "Oh, could we?" And I said, "Well, I don't know why not." So we ended up with an ensemble. At first it was three poets and a guitar player, and then after a few years it became two poets and a flute player, all women.
Wonderful.
And we played all over the city. We played in Indiana and Wisconsin for about 15 years, reciting poetry and having the flute music thread through it or come behind it, and it was so much fun.
Excellent. So for people who have not had a chance to see poetry with flute, or maybe poetry with other instruments as well, how does that change the tenor or the tone of a poetry reading when you have that sort of musical accompaniment?
It's a wonderful addition because my feeling is that a sensitive musician, and we had our flute player was fabulous. She had a wide range of music available to her, and she was very good at taking a small snatch of something when it matched the feeling of the poem. And so it lends another dimension to the poem if the music is played behind the poem. And between poems, it not only holds the poems in a kind of continuum, but it gives the audience time to digest what they just heard and kind of relax from it and then be brought gently into the next one, whatever it's going to be.
That's wonderful. And so in terms of the support that you got from the poetry community and lovers of poetry, it's remarkable that you had that 15-year run and a multi-state tour. It's delightful that you had that sort of support.
We were really shameless. We would go anywhere.
Excellent.
Anywhere anybody was willing to listen, we would go.
Great. If you're just joining us, Zoe Keithley is my guest here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS. We've been talking a little bit about music with poetry. We are going to hear just a little bit of Dizzy Gillespie, who did the station ID for the show this afternoon. And then when we come back, I'll ask Zoe a little bit more about what brought her to poetry, and we'll hear some samples from her new book, Crow Song. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Thank you.
salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts.
This hour of programming is sponsored by Academy of Art University in San Francisco. Academy of Art University will be holding an open house and fashion show on Saturday, May 8th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 601 Brannan Street in San Francisco. Interested students will have the opportunity to experience a live runway fashion show featuring the latest collections from fashion graduates, meet department directors, get portfolio feedback, tour art facilities and residence halls, learn about admissions, campus life, financial aid, and more. Admission is free. You can RSVP at 1-800-544-ARTS or visit academyart.edu.
This is KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks to everyone who helped out with the fundraiser last week. I should let you know that my co-host on the fundraiser, the inimitable Whitey, who offered so much energy on last week's show, he's going to be giving a poetry reading this coming Tuesday evening, the 4th of May, at 8 p.m., on the UC Davis campus, right there in the English department at 126 Voorhees. That's Whitey Erickson. He'll be reading from his new novel in verse called Henrytown. That's Tuesday night at 8. And then Wednesday night at 8, Patrick Grizel, one of the original members, the original founders of the Sacramento Poetry Center. Patrick Grizel will be accompanied by a musician himself a week from tonight, on the 5th of May, in honor of Cinco de Mayo. He'll be reading some Pablo Neruda poems and then also launching into his own original music and verse. That'll be at Bistro 33's Poetry Night a week from tonight on May 5th at 8 p.m., 226 F Street here in the city of Davis. Local poet and fiction writer Zoe Keithley is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. And during this segment, we're talking about her life in the arts in Chicago. Now, Zoe, you had mentioned that you had you got a fresh start with the arts later in life.
Yes.
Tell me about your the original inspirations that brought you to poetry or writing or fiction or music, as well as what got you restarted in Chicago.
Well, I think... when I was a little girl, when I was about four, I tried to write a novel. Of course, in those days, that was a long time ago, children weren't able to write at four. So my mother took dictation from me, and I got to chapter four in the novel, and I decided that I didn't have an original idea in there.
Oh, yeah.
And so I refused to finish it. And... then, you know, lots of years, like most of children, reading a lot of very imaginative books. So we had, my mother saw that we had lots of books in the house and everything. I loved Broadway shows. So that got me onto song lyrics. I remember falling in love with Hoagy Carmichael's song lyrics, which mm-hmm. are wonderful.
Yeah.
And then I became an English major in college, and I was horrified to discover that they were not going to let me write.
Really?
I thought being an English major was all about doing the writing. And while I was interested in other people's writing, I wasn't quite as interested in theirs as I was in my own. So it didn't turn out to be exactly what I had expected. I did some writing in the literary magazine in college. I was the editor of the literary magazine. And
where did you go to college?
Trinity College in Washington, D.C., which mm-hmm. is now it's where Nancy Pelosi went and Kathleen Sebelius and a few other people like that.
Wonderful.
Were there shortly after me. And then I met a wonderful poet, George Keithley, at University of Iowa, and we got married and had a family and moved to Chico. And, of course, George wrote that. He is a fabulous poet and wrote A Song in a Strange Land and The Downer Party, the book-length poem about the Downer Party, which is just mind-blowing. And you know, time came that we felt that we needed to go our separate ways. And so I went back to Chicago because I grew up there. And I found this program at Columbia College in Chicago, a very unusual writing program that works from almost entirely from image and impulse. And so it was non-academic, but in a college. And I fell in love with it, and I got a graduate degree there, and I ended up staying there for 21 years teaching it. I took it out into the public schools. I wanted kids who had never had a chance at something like this to experience it. And I had started writing poetry again. I had not written much poetry. And about a year before I left California, a few poems had started coming through. And then I was writing them a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that the I didn't see much division between the fiction writing and the poetry, because they both came from an impulse of an image that had something to say, that had history behind it, or had a depth that I wanted to explore. And for me, the depth always almost turns out to be a part of a story or a whole story in itself. And it just sort of pulls me in until I find out what it's about.
That's wonderful. Well, if you want to see some examples of these images, you can pick up a copy of the book Crow Song. It's from Roan Press out of Sacramento. Zoe Keithley, if we wanted to find Crow Song in local bookstores or newsstands, where might we go? We'd probably head over to Sacramento.
Well, actually, you can find it at the Avid Reader here in Davis.
Excellent.
Yes. And then in Sacramento, besides Roan Press, Time Tested Books, and Sunlight of the Spirit on J Street, and the Bookseller.
Excellent. So head over to Midtown Sacramento or to our own Avid Reader if you want to pick up a copy of Crow Song by Zoe Keithley. Well, I bet folks at home, Zoe, are hoping to hear a sample from your new book, Crow Song. Do you have a poem picked out that you could share with listeners of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour?
I do. This is called To Reach the Ocean. To reach the ocean, you must first pass along California 152, and so through the woman sleeping as if upon her side, and all her embellishments open and in shameless display, and coming on like an avalanche toward your speeding car. But then it is her quarters through which you pass and upon which you intrude. So if she wishes you to see how the last light of day crawls across her breasts, clings to what of her is round while it also feels its way along dark and secret crevices, or to reveal what she idly cups, sweet and wanton, or how she lets the silken water plunge cool over her extremities, who is to stop her? You forget the ocean, the motel, the lover you are to meet, your name, your useless skin rumpled upon the seat beside you, to open fins of fingers and feet, to stroke the thick honey light until viscous and thinning, you too flow over her, spilling, clinging, coating, and rise slowly, slowly, until you have become the very air cradling her.
Oh, that's wonderful. I see what you mean about starting with an image. I have to ask, did that come whole cloth from your imagination, or were there other inspirations for that particular
It came from driving on California 152.
I bet. Great, great. I really like that a lot. Could you share with us another one?
Sure. In my early morning mind, I invite you to Sunday breakfast. But you must bring your own coffee. I have the milk and sugar. I set the fold-out table on the back porch so you can keep company with treetops and watch against the blue sky the tiny flag of the Edgewater Beach Apartments snap in the wind. A linen cloth for the table, a bowl of pansies, the bulging sun times, bacon and provolone for the omelet, I'm good with eggs, a little strawberry yogurt, fat baking powder biscuits, butter and honey and marmalade. What have I left out? Oh, the early June air teasing our hair, a slow rumbling bumblebee, the great tree to the right that throws high her umbrella under which we can talk, read, and spread butter on another biscuit. Your eyes stray across my neighbor's yard to rest upon her iris, daisies, and just sprouted corn. You let your hand fall softly to finger a comment onto my cat winding through the legs of your chair. At the end, stepping from the clutter of dishes, you kiss me your thanks. It is your way, though I am already thanked and can hardly stand, become so drunken now from the sight and smell of you so near. You wave your way down the back, and I follow your hand, the top of your head, the striking of your boot heels, then the arcing squeak of the gate. I wait while all that space washes clean again, but without you. I feel the longing dig through me as I turn in my bed and begin again. It is Sunday. I invite you to breakfast. You must bring your own coffee.
Oh, that was wonderful. Tell me again the title of that poem.
In My Early Morning Mind.
And that's from Zoe Keithley's book, Crow Song. It's a new publication from Roan Press, which is based in Sacramento, California. Zoe Keithley, that was wonderful. Do you have any upcoming events or readings or things to plug?
Let's see. I have nothing in particular in Sacramento just now. We think we will have there will be a reading at Sunlight of the Spirit, but it's unscheduled. It will be sometime this summer. And they have a wonderful space for a performance like that.
That's great. And remind me, I think that place has sprung up since I moved away from Sacramento. And
it has. It's around 23rd and J, right
okay.
in there.
Mm-hmm. That's a great neighborhood, right around the corner from the bookseller and not far.
That's right.
From time-tested books on 21st Street as well.
And we'll be doing a performance with Lua Hightower, who played music at the book launch that we had in Sacramento when the book came out. She plays tambura and drums and does vocalizing behind the poems. It's very beautiful.
That sounds wonderful. Well, I don't know if I've caught you up on this, but I have started up this blog called poetryanddavis.com. And so let me know when you've got a date, and I'll add that to my blog.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
We can remind listeners, too.
Okay.
Great. Well, Zoe Keithley, author of Crow Song, Sacramento poet and fiction writer, thanks so much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and I've got a little bit more jazz to share with you after this important message from the Linux Users Group of Davis.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019 or via email at root@lugod.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. I wanted to let you know that there is a poetry event coming up, Aid for Haiti, Poetry, Music, and Solidarity, on May 15th. Poetry will include poems by Dennis Schmitz, Bob Stanley, Quentin Duval, James Denbor, Victoria Dalkey, Susan Kelly DeWitt, and Mary Zeppa. I've had at least half those people on this radio show, so you may know some of them. Music by Pat Grizel, blues guitarist in his band The Junkyard Burlesque. And Pat Grizel will be playing it and performing his poetry at Bistro 33 a week from tonight. And then there'll be a talk by Larry Castagnola, longtime activist in Haiti. This will be at the Newman Center in Sacramento. If you have questions, you can feel free to email me at aojones@gmail.com. Candace Andrews is my next guest. She's the director of a play, Some Things Are Private, presented by the UC Davis Department of Theater and Dance, which opens a week from today, Wednesday, May 5th, and plays through Sunday, May 9th, at the Main Theater, UC Davis. Candace Andrews comes to UC Davis after working as a traveling drama director and speech and drama teacher in Colorado for 4 years. In 2003, she received a grant to teach in 13 countries, including the poorest neighborhoods in India, Cuba, and Africa, as well as futuristic institutes and theaters in Japan and Hong Kong. During her tour, she introduced drama curriculum in many of these schools. She's directed at the Rialto Theater for the Creative Arts for students of theater and the Roberta Price Civic Auditorium in Loveland, Colorado. She was featured as Artist Spotlight in the December 2008 issue of Inside the City, Sacramento, and she's here in the studios of 14 Lower Freeborn. Candace Andrews, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. So the new play is called Some Things Are Private. It opens a week from tonight. Can you tell folks a little bit about it? As the title suggests, it touches on some tricky issues that may make some people a little bit uncomfortable, but which is still an important play to see, I think.
Yeah, that's definitely right. Well, let's see, where do I begin? This play really is touching upon the controversy of art and exploitation and asking really hard questions of the audience and viewers of what is art and where do we draw the line. I found myself last year here at UC Davis and watching a lot of art, attending a lot of devised pieces that some had nudity, some didn't. And it really made me, as a viewer, as an artist myself, say, how is this art? And so then I really wanted to dive into asking others, what is art and where do we draw the line? So we're really looking closely at Sally Mann, who's a famous photographer who became famous, unfortunately, due to the controversy that was caused by her photographs in the late 80s and early 90s, where she had a series of photographs of her children called Immediate Family. And those photographs sparked a lot of emotional reaction and became really prevalent and attacked, I guess you could say, in the media. And so now Deborah Salem Smith and Laura Kepley, who created this show with Sally Mann through several interviews, were mixing fact and fiction and pulling specific things from the media and the newspaper articles back then. And we're looking closely at these questions and asking the audience to, I guess, dare to deal with it and define their beliefs.
And so when you talk about defining beliefs, some of those beliefs are about the nature of art, what is allowed of art, what is expected of art, what happens when art confronts or doesn't meet our expectations, and also the mores of different communities, that what might not raise an eyebrow in Berkeley might cause outrage in, say, Selma, and these sorts of issues as well.
Exactly. Sally Mann herself is from Lexington, Virginia, mm-hmm. and so she really expresses her art through not traveling outside of her home. You know, she created her art by looking at the art around her in nature and within her family that really has kept her grounded. And so bringing that art to the public eye, it has raised a lot of eyebrows. This also became such an issue in the late 80s and early 90s because it was a really conservative time period where religion and child pornography was really prevalent,
mm-hmm.
Or at least was brought to the light to be prevalent at that time period. And so, in my opinion, she just kind of she was at a bad place at a bad time, and
right.
so she was attacked a little bit, but some have really good arguments as to why they feel the way they feel. And so we're going to present those issues in the play and then followed with a talk back on Wednesday and Saturday evening so that they can dive into that and express how they feel and what they believe on these issues.
What were some of the challenges for you as the director of Some Things Are Private? And what were some of the joys of the production as well?
Well, I'll start with the good. The joys were working directly with Deborah Salem Smith. I had the opportunity to meet her, and I got to see the show premiered in Providence, Rhode Island at Trinity mm-hmm. Repertory Theater. And so that was really exciting. And then what was more exciting was approaching her and asking her if we could have the rights to do the show. And immediately she was honored by that, and we were honored by that. And she said, well, you'll have to contact Sally Mann, and we'll go from there. And I thought, oh, wow, okay, we may not get very far on this just because the rights are so strict
right.
with Sally. So I did contact Sally Mann via email. And quite a while went by where we thought, okay, maybe we need to give up here. But then she contacted us back, and she was really open to it and very supportive and wonderful to work with. And so we are actually the first university granted the rights to do this production. It's very exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. And a coup for you as well to get this important play, to work with these important people, and to kind of maybe hatch a vision of what you might do with it way over there in Providence and bring it back here to Davis.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your own background. What brought you to Davis and UC Davis originally?
I was teaching speech and drama in Loveland, Colorado, mm-hmm. At the high school level, and I've always wanted to be a professor, and I love directing, of course, by profession. So I got into the graduate program here, which was a full fellowship program that accepted me into the Master of Fine Arts directing program, and it's been wonderful. It's provided an opportunity for me to really grow in my profession and to work towards being a professor of theater and to direct professionally. And then my personal hobby, I have such a personal hobby and passion for photography, so working with the professors in the art department, taking a class with Matthias Geiger, it was wonderful, and working with Jesse Velasquez and taking courses in photography And getting to mesh both of my passions in one and do this show has been wonderful.
I bet. And who has been one of your favorite mentors or inspirations in theater and dance?
There's so many. You know, the faculty over there is wonderful. And I've had a great opportunity to work with Sarah P. Anderson, who's mm-hmm. a professional director in L.A. in film and television, along with John Iacovelli, who's a famous set designer and production designer in the L.A. industry. So that's been really wonderful, and I've had a lot of great support by Jade, who's also over there as a professor of theater, and she's always keeping my chin up.
That's great. Yeah, I found all three of those people to be very generous in spirit and conversation.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you've connected with them while you're here. So great. Remind us when the play opens, where we could see it, and how long the run is.
The show opens next Wednesday, May 5th, and it runs through Sunday, May 9th. It's at 8 p.m. every evening, except for Sunday is a 2 p.m. matinee. And it's at the main stage in Wright Hall, and tickets can be bought at the Mondavi box office or at the door on opening or prior to opening.
Excellent. Great. And if we wanted to find out more information about this on the web, where would we go?
You could go to the Theater and Dance website, and you can just Google UC Davis Theater and Dance and go into the current season, and it will list the show, and it'll have photos and press release information as well about the show.
Excellent. And that's where you can find out more about Some Things Are Private, directed by my guest, Candace Andrews. Candace, good to see you again.
You too. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to seeing the show.
Great. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We're going to do just a little bit more theater here on the program and talk about hair. But first, here's an important message about household allergens. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis.
Air filled with common household allergens can cause headaches, allergies, and even asthma. Here are a few tips to help keep the air in your home fresh. Ventilate the attic and crawl spaces to prevent moisture and mold buildup. Also, use an air dehumidifier or air conditioner to control indoor humidity. To help clean air circulate, change air conditioning and furnace filters every 2 months. It's also important to service your heating and cooling systems regularly.
Primary Care Association reminds the women of our community to have screening mammograms at recommended intervals. Today's low-dose state-of-the-art mammography can detect tumors too small to be discovered by touch. So don't delay, because early diagnosis can mean that you'll have a better than 95% chance of successful treatment. This important message is a courtesy of California Primary Care Association in Sacramento, wishing all the mothers in our community a happy Mother's Day. On the air because they care about the health of the women in our community. Welcome back to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. One of the traditions on this radio show is that if you listen for an hour, you can fill your black book with activities for the following week. For instance, we've talked about poetry readings, one starring Whitey, who you heard on this radio show last week, Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock at 126 Voorhees at the UC Davis campus. And then the day after that, on the 5th of May, Patrick Grizel will be accompanied by a musician performing some poetry by Pablo Neruda, an original verse, at Poetry Night at Bistro 33. I'll be attending both of those productions, and maybe I'll see you there. Speaking of great productions, Hair is opening. Is it tonight? Hair is opening tonight. Hair is a show that I didn't see on stage when I was a kid, but we had the soundtrack playing all the time when I was a kid. And I saw the movie and loved it, as I think a lot of listeners have. And now we get to see it live. And we've got a bunch of people here who are a part of that production, many of whom have been on the radio show before, but I want to reintroduce you to them. Steph, it's Harkinson, right?
Hankinson.
Yeah. Just quick handwriting check. Steph Hankinson is here. She's the director of the production of Hair, the Studio 301 production that opens this evening. Gia Battista is back. She plays Sheila. Mark Ferrando is here playing Claude. And Esteban Gonzalez playing Berger. Welcome to all four of you to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you.
Hi.
Good to see you all again. All right. Steph, let's start with you. Did you lobby for Hair? Was Hair thrust upon you? How did you come to this particular production?
I mean, you know, we wanted to do a musical. You know, we knew in 301 there wasn't a musical offered this year in the theater and dance department and wanted to do a musical, and I directed Midsummer outside in the Arboretum last spring, and Macbeth with Gia this fall outside, and I'm a big proponent of found theater spaces, and the Arboretum offered us a chance to do a show out near the gazebo, and Hair seemed like the perfect opportunity for something to do in the spring.
And something to do in nature, too.
Absolutely.
Because from what I remember, there's a back-to-nature sentimentality in some of the lyrics of the songs that you all will be singing tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the characters are basically living their lives out in Central Park in New York City, you know, and they're obsessed, and the show's creators were obsessed with, you know, Native American themes and the natural world, and basically that everything you can find out there in the earth that isn't urban, it isn't technology, and these people are obsessed with this, and so it's great to be outside. I mean, there's plenty of lines throughout the show even that go to this. You know, there's lines, look at the moon, look at the moon, look at the moon, and we can look at the moon. You know, it's great. It's going to be full tonight, too. So
that's wonderful. A great night to see the show. Say a little bit more about the plot for people who don't know. I remember reading somewhere, maybe you know this, that Diane Keaton had a part in the original production of Hair.
Yeah. She played Sheila, I believe, in the original production of the show. But basically, just, you know, short story short, it's a concept musical. So the theme itself sort of overwhelms any plot. But the basic plot it follows Claude Hooper Bukowski. He's a young man. He's dropped out of high school, and he's been drafted into you know, the draft in 1968 to fight in Vietnam, along with all the other men in the tribe, the huge ensemble group, and it's his journey through trying to decide whether he's going to go and fight for his country or not, and just sort of takes a look at the lives of these 28 people in our cast that are, you know, just, you know, not content with the situation politically, socially, just the discontent of the youth and vibrancy that the hippie culture took on, I think, in 1968.
Excellent. Now, often we look at a play like this with protests against the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. And we say, well, where are there resonances with what's going on today? And this might be a different sort of production in tone if it had taken place, say, 2 years ago than if it does today. So I'm wondering if you all consciously or if you consciously touch upon any political themes or commentary as to what's going on today, or is it inevitable, or what's your attitude towards that?
You know, I think it's inescapable. I mean, we're in a war abroad, and there's movement, especially in the UC and CSU system right now. There's a movement of vibrant protest from the youth culture and just discontent with the way that things are, and you know, lobbying for change is something that, I mean, Obama ran on this platform to be elected president, so I think it's inevitable that these themes will rush into the play. But as for us making explicit references in the production, not so much, because I don't think it's necessary. I feel like the themes themselves sort of resonate more than us saying, okay, we're doing this because of the situation. It just sort of happened that we were. But I think it makes it all the more powerful.
I think so, too. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, and we're talking about a production of Hair that begins this evening. And it's in the Arboretum. And tell us, Steph, how do people get there? We can't mention ticket prices, but you can tell them how to buy tickets.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where should they park? How does it work?
Yeah, this is the trickiest part. You'll take LaRue Drive, south on LaRue, and then you'll take a right on Garrod Drive. It's actually right behind the Arboretum gazebo, which is just south of the vet center there. And you can park in those parking lots right in front of the vet center. There'll be plenty of signs to get them to the space. But if they look up directions to the Arboretum gazebo, either on the Arboretum website, or you can look at our webpage, Studio 301 Productions, at googlepages.com. And if they want to reserve tickets, it's not necessary, but you can reserve tickets by emailing hairreservations2010@gmail.com.
Excellent. And Gia Battista is back for perhaps the fourth or fifth time on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. She's a longtime favorite actress of people who regularly attend productions by Studio 301 or the Department of Theater and Dance. Gia, welcome back. You play Sheila in this production.
Yes, I do.
Tell us a little bit about Sheila.
Sheila is very active in protests. She lives with Claude and Berger, the other two principal roles. This production was really interesting because we got to do a lot of, there's not a lot of text in the script, and they actually give you a lot of leeway to do whatever you want, really. So we did a lot of character development and discussing, and if you basically ask any member in the tribe, any of the cast members, you know, who their best friends are, where they were born, what their birthday is, where they're living, they could give you a full-on description, you know. So that's been really, really awesome, especially when we have so many people in the cast that don't necessarily have lines. We've really developed on our characters, and Sheila's been a really great part for me. Just to really play up the strength of the protest and the spirit and getting everybody involved. So, yeah.
Excellent. Good for you. And you get to sing in the show?
I do get to sing in the show.
You probably get to dance?
Yes, we all do. We all sing and dance.
Wonderful. So, and I'm sure that's a lot of fun, too, out in the open air. And
absolutely.
Good.
In the grass.
Right. So, a lot of freedoms being explored in this production of Hair. Let's talk to Mark Ferrando, who plays Claude. And Claude, Mark, where does Claude's character come from originally?
Oh, well, Claude Hooper-Bukowski likes to say that he's from Manchester, England.
Right, in the famous song.
Yeah, in the famous song, Manchester,
right.
England. But he's actually from Flushing. He is a big character of imagination, so he likes to believe that he could be from somewhere far away where the limits of the society and the war are not upon him, so that he can live freely. And that's really what he's about, is freedom.
I remember when I was a kid, I said, I asked my mom, "Mom, what's a genian?" Because, you know, just genius, genian. And I couldn't figure that out. She said, I think it's just a rhyming word for England. But these are words you get to sing full-throatedly tonight, right?
Yeah. I'm a genius, genius.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. So, and you get to proclaim that to everyone who's listening.
Yep. So, he proclaims many things about himself.
Right. True ostentation. So, what are some of your other favorite things about playing this role?
I mean, one song that I really love about Claude is his song about "I Got Life."
Yeah.
And it's his whole list song about everything that he's got, and it's the things that everyone's got. And it's just really appreciating the things that you're given in life, because the whole hippie movement, it's about the earth, nature, and Claude's just, you know what? As human beings, we have all these things. Don't take it for granted.
Absolutely. We're talking about the Studio 301 production of Hair that starts tonight out at the Arboretum Gazebo. And I've got three members of the cast here as well as the director, and they're all hoping that you're going to go see this show. Esteban Gonzalez, welcome to the program. You play Burger.
Yes, I do.
Tell us a little bit about Burger.
Well, Burger is from San Francisco, where the original BN occurred.
Mm-hmm.
He was kicked out of high school for peddling drugs, and he's actually very intelligent, but he's your quintessential prime, primitive, driven youth. He will do whatever he feels like doing. He's very outgoing. I like to actually consider him kind of the craziest in the tribe. He
right.
will go in your face. He'll take off your his pants, your pants. Everyone will be pantsless, and we'll have a great time.
Excellent. That's Burger, and I think you've already named some of your favorite parts of Plain Burger. But tell me about the music. What sort of background did you have in music to prepare for this particular role?
I've actually only been singing for about 6 years, and
uh-huh.
I actually don't come from a musical background, so this was actually a big challenge for me. I've never actually had a full lead in a musical before.
Good for you.
This is my favorite show of all time, so this is a treat, Plain Burger. He's difficult. He sings a lot. He's very, like I said, outspoken. He yells. He screams. He'll be in your face. So it's been tough, but I've really enjoyed doing it. It's been a dream, like I said, a dream come true. I
Excellent.
Can't explain it.
And I'll ask this of anyone who wants to answer. What's something else about this show that we haven't mentioned yet that'll be a big draw, a big reason that people will be happy that they've come? Steph, you want to take it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this show has 50 musical numbers, I believe, and we have Dave Moschler, who's a fabulous musical director and a really good friend of mine that's working on the show. So I think even if you're not a huge fan of theater, come for the music. There's this we have an amazing band. It's a full 12 or 13 pieces. We've got like four horns, two guitarists, fabulous drummers, you know, keyboard, bass, the whole situation. So even if you're into the music from the 60s, this was created by people that were fully embedded in the music scene from the 1960s, and that's one of the best parts of the show. It's not just the themes, it's not just the characters, but it's also very, very much about the music and the time. So if you're into music from that, or remember this show from, you know, your own youth, we're closing a sort of generation gap, I think, with this, which is really cool to watch people come back and re-experience Hair.
That's great. Well, it's a production of Hair. It starts tonight at the Arboretum Gazebo. Where would people go on the web if they wanted to find out more information?
They can look it up on Facebook. They can Google Studio 301 Productions on Facebook, or Google Hair Studio 301, or they can go to our website, which is studio301productions@googlepages.com.
Excellent. Great. Well, Steph, Gia, Mark, and Esteban, thanks so much for coming back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Good to see you all. And I look forward to seeing you on stage, so to speak, if you can call it a stage. It's more just crazy fun out there. And that's why I'm going, maybe some of you folks at home will check it out as well. I've got one more public service announcement from our sponsor, which is the Academy of Art. We're going to hear from them, and then we'll conclude this edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
This hour of programming is sponsored by Academy of Art University in San Francisco. Academy of Art University will be holding an open house and fashion show on Saturday, May 8th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 601 Brannan Street in San Francisco. Interested students will have the opportunity to experience a live runway fashion show featuring the latest collections from fashion graduates, meet department directors, get portfolio feedback, tour art facilities and residence halls, learn about admissions, campus life, financial aid, and more. Admission is free. You can RSVP at 1-800-544-ARTS or visit academyart.edu.
I'd like to thank my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry on Technology Hour. Zoe Keithley was here in the first half hour reading to us from her book, Crow Song, the brand new book from Roan Press, R-O-A-N Press. It's a great book. You heard some impressive examples, and I'm glad that I own a copy. Candace Andrews came by next to tell us about Some Things Are Private, show that opens a week from tonight, presented by the UC Davis Department of Theater and Dance. And then just now, we heard from Steph, Gia, Mark, and Esteban. They are the director and three of the leads in the production of Hair that opens tonight out at the Arboretum Gazebo. That will be an amazing value for your dollar should you choose to go support that production with all that great music and all those great dancing zany actors. My name is Andy Jones. I'll see you next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Bye-bye, everyone.